No, you want me to...
Wait, we'll put an introduction in.
I apologize.
You don't have to. National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Margie Silverman and Natalie Mandelblatt are interviewing I.R. Raphael on January 20th, 1976. The home for the ancient.
Yes, we were talking about how Manny Spector.
Yeah.
No, we were past.
No, that was
no,
past.
We were past.
Oh, we're on the home for the ancient.
The home for the ancient. Well, Mendel Solomon, who's a very, very dear friend of mine, who's now retired and lives in Florida, we talked to him once or twice a month. He calls us, we call him, and he had his brother in the home, and he didn't like to go there. Yet he did everything in the world for him. He just couldn't take the environment there. It's tough. So I used to go up there with him and visit with him, visit with his brother, and I drive him up and bring him back. While I was up there, they took a look at me. Election was coming up, and they said, well, wait a minute, you're the guy we can use here. And that's how I got into it. Just that way.
What year, approximately?
Well, at least 30 years ago. And I served, I am at the present time the honorary, I don't know why, but the honorary treasurer of it. Don't mean a thing. And as I say, I was on the building committee. I was on the admissions committee. We interviewed the people that came in. And I remember one particular woman who came up there. I forget her name now. But she was fairly well fixed, and she couldn't, her children had all gone, and she wanted to come in the home, yet she didn't want to. She thought it was because the old home up on Brackenridge Street was a real rat trap. It was impossible. I was in that. But anyhow, I was selected to take her through the building and show her the room, show her the beauty parlor, show her the restaurant, the kitchen, and all of that. We walked out of the admissions room, and sitting in the lobby there was a woman, an old friend of hers that she hadn't seen in years. They ran up and embraced each other. And she says she was thinking of coming. Oh, my job was done. She never went any further. And the next day she was in the home.
Were you still at, you must have been active on the board when Riverview
yes.
was started.
Yes. Riverview is quite an experiment. You know, there's two Riverviews. The first Riverview was started, then the second Riverview. It's a very fine piece of work. And as they say, we sold the first lot, on which Riverview number one is on, for a dollar, because we were communal minded. The second one, we had some homes on, we had to tear them down, we had paid some money for them, and I think it was $70,000-$80,000 paid by the Federation to the home.
Oh, they are not?
Oh, they're separate organizations there.
I didn't know that.
Oh, they're separate organizations, completely separate organizations with a complete board of directors of their own.
I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, sure. It's a separate thing. Only thing is they're on the grounds of the home. And one of the reasons they started that, putting the first number one on there, was the fact that they didn't have a kitchen. They didn't have kitchen facilities, so the food was cooked down at the home, pushed up there in carts. They didn't have medical service. They used the medical service that they had at the home, so it was, they helped them grow. Now they have their own kitchen. And it's an entirely different operation. They helped him get off of the ground on this thing because it was strictly an experiment. They didn't know whether they were going to get one customer or 5,000. As it is now, they have a waiting list of 200-300. But I don't go to the home as often as I used to because I get up Sunday morning. That's my rest day.
Of course, you're still working.
Yeah.
You're entitled. Yes. What was your social life like after you were married? What kind of things were you interested in?
Football.
It hasn't changed.
No, not much. No, we went to shows, we went to movies, not too often recently. But we've taken a lot of trips.
Tell us about some of your travels.
Well, we've been to Israel 3 times.
When did you first go?
1966. When was it?
66. Before the 67 war, yeah.
Before the Seven-Day War. Then we went there after that. After the Seven-Day War. Then we were there in January.
When was January?
And you have just the one cousin there?
I have one cousin. She has a second cousin.
I have a cousin.
Of her mother. A third cousin, a fourth cousin, who lives in Jerusalem. And we visit the both of them. We take care of them. And then we were in France. She has a brother living in France. We visited him. Her father is buried in Jerusalem.
Had he lived there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they both lived there.
They lived there.
They left here after all their children were married, after I decided to take this gal on. As soon as they got rid of her, they packed up and they lived there.
Do we have the date of their marriage?
No.
Huh?
I forgot to ask the date.
1930.
When you were married.
Oh, yeah, we met in 19. That's right.
What kind of hobbies have you enjoyed?
None.
Organization?
I played golf. I belonged to Greengold's Country Club, and I gave that up. And we had a place up in the country. We used to go up there and visit. We had one up near Somerset. Our big deal there was to chop down trees.
The great outdoor man.
Yeah. Some recreation.
But truthfully, I didn't have too much time for hobbies as hobbies go. I've worked all my life.
And the organization's filled the need.
And the organization's right. Filled the need. And now I might tell you a little bit about my business, which I think I enjoy. That's my hobby. I work 5 days a week. I'm at my office every morning by 7:30. I come home at 4:30. I don't go in Saturday or Sunday unless there's something very unusual. I'm a 50-some year member of the National Electrical Contractors Association. I am a vice president of our local chapter, have been for 12, 14 years. I'm on the labor committee. I'm a trustee of our pension fund. I am a member of the electrical subcommittee, which has to do with interviewing and hiring minorities into the building construction business. I find that takes a lot of time. In fact, I have a meeting this Thursday.
Do you have any other family left in the business with you?
No. Period. It's a shame, but that's the story. And then I'm a member of Oakton Lodge 535. I'm a life member there.
You you say lodge?
Yeah.
Could you give me the...
No, I'm talking Oakland. About the Veterans Association. Squirrel Hill Veterans.
The American Legion?
All that jazz, you get into this thing and you're a marked man.
What are you on the American Legion?
I'm just a member. They took me in there one night and made me a member, and I've never been in there since. I pay my dues. But I've had a full life together with my organization work and my business. And I've enjoyed it.
Do you belong to any other organizations?
Do I?
Do you belong to a temple or synagogue?
Sinai.
I was on the board for 9 years there.
He was one of the charter members when Sinai started.
I started from there. I was on the original board at the Tree of Life when they were on Craft Avenue. And then I went to one of the founding members of Temple Sinai.
He's a member of Hadassah, too. As an associate.
Yeah, she made me an associate member of Hadassah.
American Jewish Committee, organization he belongs to.
That's what I want
to
know.
Oh.
You're a member
Ort. Men's Ort.
I'm going to stop.
Always.
Have you had much involvement with politics?
No. I am a Republican. I'll tell you how I become a Republican. I voted on what was known as you vote on age. You didn't register when I voted for the first time. I lived on Dinwiddie Street, and the whole Hill District was Republican. So I went into this place to vote for the first time, and before I had a chance to say anything, give me a Republican ballot, see? And I've never changed, though I voted for Roosevelt the first time. I voted against Hoover, but voted for Roosevelt. I vote the man, not the party, but I'm still registered as a Republican.
What impact did either the First World War or each of them, or the second, have on your life, aside from joining?
I remember after World War I, we had a Secretary of State with the name of Kellogg. Kellogg concocted what he thought was known as the Kellogg Peace Pact. He grew this thing up in which all the major countries were to sign this document. There'd be no more war. I thought that was the most wonderful thing in the world. For me to tell me that these people sat down and signed this, and it was on the Pathé News, I'll never forget that. And no more war. It didn't take no time to bust it out all good. But I was just naive enough then
to believe it.
I think everybody wanted to believe it so much.
Well, I not only wanted to, I did. I really would. It was marvelous to within myself. Did mean to tell me that they're going to quit shooting and killing people? Couldn't believe it.
What impact did Prohibition have on you?
Nothing particularly. I kept drinking.
You know what that ought to take?
Of course he does.
That's true. I still take a drink or two a day.
Did it change your social life at all that you had?
Yeah.
Was it easy to find a bootlegger in Pittsburgh?
Oh, no problem. Pick up a phone and call. I had a whole black book of numbers. You must think I'm terrible.
No, I don't. I think you're my kind of guy. What sort of impact did the Depression have?
Well, the Depression had a very deep impact on me. We were quite fortunate. We had our office then in the Frick Building. We had one job during the Depression. Now, this is strange. And that job was the East Liberty Presbyterian Church, quite a large contract. I got up in the morning, and my daughter then was 3, 4, 5 years old, and started giving breakfast and drive me over from, we lived on Canaan Street then, drive me over to East Liberty Presbyterian Church and leave me and then go home. And then I would visit the job and then get on a bus or streetcar and go into the Frick Building. Well, then in the afternoons I had nothing to do. No, everything was done. This went on for almost 2 years. It was the most depressing time ever experienced, but fortunately we had this one big job which kept us out of trouble.
You had mentioned Mellon in connection with the church.
Yeah.
How did you get the contract?
We got for that through James Lyle Stewart, who was R.B. Mellon's construction agent. We knew him, he knew us, and we bid the job, and our bid was right, and we got the job.
Is that where Mellon Stewart grew out of?
Yes, yes. James Lyle Stewart at one time was a member of the Mellon Stewart, and then he branched out for himself. Very big, tall individual, handsome looking fellow. But I had an interesting thing on that job. Halfway through the job, Mrs. R.B. Mellon went to New York to listen to the sound system in the St. John Divine Church. They were installing a Western Electric Company sound system in it. And there was a fellow named Bloodworth who put this system in St. John Divine. And she came back home and she said, I don't want Western Electric Company, I want St. John Divine. That's the Bloodworth system that he has in there. And the engineer drew up some drawings and they sent me to New York to go over this to see, because this building was about 50-60% complete when they decided to change this. And I went to New York and went to Bloodworth's office, sat down with their engineer. It was on a Saturday, I remember that particularly. And we went over the drawings and run the conduit here and do this part here, and I think it could be done, except you got to cut this wall out. And anyhow, the next morning, he made a date with me, and we went to St. Patrick's. We sat up at the console, and I operated the sound system for the services Sunday morning at St. Patrick's. Then Monday, I went over to Philadelphia, and then I went on home. In Philadelphia, they had an installation in one of the colleges that they had done. And they had the finest sound system. You know, I don't know if you ever heard the chimes from the East Liberty Presbyterian Church, but that's all done on records. It's unbelievable. And that's quite a building.
Yes, it is.
That's quite a building. You know, they call it R.B. Mellon's fire escape. Because he never lived to see it finished.
Oh.
Never lived to see it finished.
Oh, we've discussed your relationships with your colleagues. Could you tell us anything about your relationship with your employees?
My employees? Well, my relationship with employees, and I've been in business 50 years, I never had a strike.
That's a good relationship.
That says something, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That's the answer.
Can you contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised Rachel?
Well, yes. I can, I this, that we weren't, we had problems as youngsters. Remember, with mother and 9 children, we had problems as any growing family would. But this young lady of mine, she has had everything that I didn't have as she grew up. And yet, she is the most unspoiled child. Well, her daddy,
we'll go, the greatest guy in the world.
But she's not spoiled in the least. Her respect for her parents is great the days that ever was, as great as you'd ever wanted to be.
Did you have as religious a household as the one in which you were brought up?
No. Although, partially. Mother and Dad, or just Mother, came to live with us?
Yeah, my father was gone.
Yeah, he was gone. Her mother came, and she was very religious. And we kept a strictly kosher house.
So long as my mother lived.
You had been brought up in
Orthodox? Orthodox side. Extremely Orthodox.
Well, yours was conservative.
More so. Yeah.
More so.
Right.
I'll give you an example how religious and kosher their family was. I've noticed. They lived originally in a little town called Keysville, Virginia. Keysville, Virginia has a total population of 400 people. I'm telling the truth. The fact of the matter is my brother felt that he didn't think that it existed. But anyhow, her father was very religious. It came the high holidays, he took the boys who were bar mitzvah.
They won't know about my family, they won't know about your family.
No, I'm telling you about your family, I'll tell you about mine. He took them to Baltimore to shul. They kept a strictly kosher house, the only Jewish family in town. They had a general store. They had to deal with the farmers. They'd bring their chickens in to Mr. Friedman's. Wait a minute, I'll tell you who. Into Mr. Friedman's store. And he would give them 25 cents in trade, or 20 cents apiece for each chicken. Well, they had more chicken than they knew what to do with. Well, he went to Richmond to learn the shechet. You know what learn the shechet to?
Yeah.
In order so they should be kosher, which I thought was marvelous.
Well, we had to.
Did you ever eat anything but chicken?
Not very often. He would come back from Richmond. He would bring meat.
Yeah.
When high holidays, he always took the boys and went to Richmond or Baltimore. Mother and the girls stayed at home. And when he would come back, he would bring some meat. In those days, we didn't have deep freeze. Yeah. You couldn't keep it, you know.
It was a little difficult.
But you know, with all the chicken, we were raised on chicken, and everyone in my family still loves it. Chicken and meat. Strange as it may seem.
It's good for you.
Excuse me, were you bar mitzvah, Mr.
Can you contrast Pittsburgh today with what it was like when you were younger?
Well, yes, I remember over in the south side they had horse-drawn trolley cars. And also I remember that when the streetcar fare was a nickel. Pickle, you rode everywhere. And you got a free transfer if you wanted to transfer. The Hill District, as I remember, was a very... Dinwiddie Street was considered... When you moved to Dinwiddie Street, and moved into the what is then known as the Stone Row, you were...
You had arrived.
You had arrived.
Why did they call it Stone Row, with the houses...
Well, all stone. Drive up there someday and you'll see it.
No, don't.
Not today, no. But it was a very interesting street. There were some very fine families lived there. A.C. Stein, who was quite a lawyer in his day, lived there. Saxes lived there, the lawyer's parents. There were a few Gentile families, not too many, maybe a half a dozen. The Summermans lived there. She was married to Oberhauer. There was Chazen Blum lived there. Reverend Blum, the cousin from B'nai Israel, he lived there.
How? When did you move from there? When you were married?
Before that? We moved from there right after World War I.
After Mother died.
Passed away, and then we broke the house up.
You lived with your sister.
Then I lived with my oldest sister.
Where?
She had an apartment. No. I moved right in on Cayman Street.
Incidentally, she's still living.
Yeah.
She's 92 years old.
Is she still living there?
She lives in an apartment house on Hempstead Road.
Is it very different culturally, the city, what it was?
Oh, no question. With Y, with the Carnegie Museum, with their programs, with Heinz Hall. I mean, all of these things, with our tremendous University of Pittsburgh, Duquesne University, Scaife Hall, Carnegie Mellon, community colleges, even our schools. Schools have cafeterias in there. They have indoor plumbing. When I went to the grant school, we had outdoor plumbing. So you know that the whole structure has changed. We're better off today than we were. Like a fellow says, I'm the good old days. I don't want the good old days. I enjoy living now. We didn't have air conditioning.
How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community now?
Well, the Jewish life has changed. We've lost a lot of our leaders. Many of them have departed from their Jewish heritage. We've lost the Franks, we've lost the Rosenblums, the old gent himself. I'm not talking about Charlie. I.W. Frank, the Laymans. We have an entirely new group of leaders. There's some few left, not many.
But do you think the impact of the Jews on Pittsburgh has changed much?
I think it's stronger.
And I'll tell you why. I had quite an experience many years ago with Bernard Horn, Joseph Horn Company, the treasurer. He called me up one day, wanted to see me. We do a lot of work with Joseph Horn Company. And I went down to see him. What can I do for you, Bernard? Well, he says, Al Birchfield, who was then president of Joseph Horn Company, has taken on the chairmanship of then, which is now the United Way, the Community Fund. It was called the Community Fund. We raised $3-4 million. He says, I need you. I've taken over the commercial end of the Community Fund under Al Birchfield. And I want you to work with me.
What year was this?
Oh.
It's fairly recently, isn't it?
No, he's been dead 10 years. Community Fund is...
I had thought Birchfield was a recent name.
No. This is A.H.
Oh.
Al Birchfield. That's W. And he wanted me to... I took over the laundry group, Seattle. And I said to Bernie, I've never worked on the community fund. He said, don't tell me about you. I know what you've done with your federation. That was the federation that we didn't have the United Jewish Fund then. Well, I went to work for him. He gave me our cards. And I really did a job for him. I raised more money that year than I ever did, than they ever did in that group. I'll never forget, we went to the victory, so-called victory dinner, and I was sitting at the table, Bernie Hearn called me up, and put his arm around me. I had one of the fellas take a picture. It was in the paper. I mean, these are the Then I had a tie-in with Oliver Kaufman. Oliver, as you know,